Hello, America, how are you? Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jeff Heatherly, and welcome back to the second of two... I don't know how to intro this, because I'm still kind of shaky about what we've just experienced.
It's pretty crazy.
So,
By the way, I'm Greg.
Yeah, I was going to introduce you. I don't know how to explain. Okay, well, what you're listening to is actually the first podcast I've recorded in, holy crap, about 8 months. This is actually the second that you hear out there in internet streaming land or whatever, wherever you live. But this is indeed the original unoriginal podcast. We are back. And today we're coming at you with something that is very specific. Not inside, but if you're not hardcore into what we're about to be talking about, it may not be as awesome to you. I will say this, I'll just go ahead and lay it on the line. Today we are going to discuss on the fact that we have just seen the final episode of quite possibly the greatest series in television history.
Possibly the greatest series in television history. It's pretty darn good. Do we worry about explicitness here?
Well, are you mean spoilers?
No, it's damn good versus darn
good. Oh! Say all... Shit, fuck, cunt, piss...
Piss out my ass, that whole sort of thing.
Yeah, say all you want. Good. So we actually did a couple episodes back last summer. We did a bit about George Carlin, and we pretty much just went through the entire seven words... On multiple occasions, so trust me, there's nothing you can say here that is not welcomed.
Okay.
I'm gonna plug in the power source because it's freaking me out. Hold on a second. You might have just heard a click. That is the brakes of having a microphone on the computer. So which means if I have to click anything at any point, if we have to look up anything, this could be a problem.
It could be, but I think we can handle it.
All right. So before we begin, once again, we are going to be discussing Battlestar Galactica. That is the remake series that followed the miniseries that came out in 2003 on the Sci-Fi Channel.
It is considered the reimagined series.
Yeah, most literature it's referred to as a reimagined series. We have reasons to believe that it is, in fact, a sequel of sorts.
A sequel... They directly reference a lot of things, and it pretty much sets itself up as a continuation of the original series, only... This is where we would say spoiler alert.
Yeah, let's not get specific.
Hold on just a second. If you haven't seen the first part, if you watch it from the very beginning, from the miniseries, it goes off and tells you that the first Cylon War happened over 40 years ago, or quite a while ago, and that this new Cylon War is later on. And there are new models of Cylons, there are all sorts
well,
of new,
hold on
new
now.
Things.
Let's sort of start from the beginning. But first, one thing. Is there anything you would like to get off your chest in terms of mood or your overall feeling right now? That I want to kind of leave the first couple minutes open for regular listeners who aren't planning on listening to the rest of this. They're like, okay, I may be interested or I could give a half flying fuck. Give me something to entertain me for 15 minutes before I push stop on this iPod. Just feelings you're feeling right now after having seen the entire series of Battlestar Galactica.
Having seen the entire series of Battlestar Galactica, I am rarely satisfied by film/television in general. I am wholly satisfied by the entirety of the show. Wholly satisfied. It is a show that is worthy of chronicling in every media and every form. It's worthy of massive amounts of accolades that it has received some accolades and
quite a few nominated for a number of awards over its time.
It really just deserves everything it gets.
It's a shame that it has never been nominated for best drama series by the Emmys.
Right, but the Emmys are pricks because
even the Golden Globes.
The Emmy and the Golden Globes. Cable TV Guys, this is the reason to watch cable TV. This is the reason to get cable and go watch it on cable TV.
This is the reason to seek out...
Because...
Battlestar Galactica, Breaking Bad, and Mad Men.
Breaking Bad, Mad Men. Cable TV is the new frontier of awesome, awesome content, awesome television.
And we're not just talking about HBO and Showtime.
Because HBO and Showtime have been out since the inception of cable, and they immediately started winning awards because they were new and edgy. But people forget...
And they could say fuck if they wanted to.
And they could say fuck if they wanted to, and that was a huge oh my god thing. But real, honest god cable TV channels where you just sign up for cable and you get them, they've... A&E, Sci-Fi, I mean, Comedy
USA.
Central, USA, TNT, sort of.
FX.
FX, original content. But, I mean, as a pinnacle, as a thing to look at that is the prototype, the archetypal thing, which everything will be self-judged to when it comes to cable TV, will be Battlestar Galactica for the next 10 years. I will do it if no one else will. I will judge every show on cable television. Really, I will pretty much judge almost every show I see from now on based on Battlestar Galactica.
You know, there was almost a correlation in what you were saying with the story of tonight's of the last few episodes we've just seen.
Oh, that
yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm about to put the buffer on this. It's only been 6 minutes. I'll go over a few more spoiler-free things from my point of view. I, on a personal level, did not start watching Battlestar Galactica until its third season was
about to
start.
Which is ridiculous to me, but okay.
But I still love it.
No, I mean, you're more than welcome to
it. Yeah, and it's what's even sadder, I'll give you my story, I'll tell you, it's even sadder is part of my reason for watching. I'll tell you my story of how I started watching. Now, I know you started watching just because you'd heard so much.
No, I actually had started watching because I had seen parts of the miniseries and thought that they were interesting, but was one of those things where I missed one of the episodes, and so I kind of just let it go. And I was still... This was back when I was still at home, and I didn't really have control over all the... Like, I couldn't watch everything I wanted to watch whenever I wanted to watch it because there were other family members involved. And so I sort of gave up on it and let it go. Thought it, didn't even realize it was a TV show until... I don't even remember what it was that caused me to watch it.
But this was last year when you really got hardcore.
Last year, yeah. Last year I decided to just go at it and start watching it. I know what it was. It was Sci-Fi was doing all of these massive, like... Because Sci-Fi has been the biggest supporter of the show... Of any TV channel I've ever seen.
You will never see a network show more respect to their programming than you will see them give Battlestar Galactica. Look at what they did with Farscape.
Yeah.
This was a rare piece of respect from the NBC Universal family.
And forgive me for anyone who hates Stargate SG-1. You're more than welcome to hate it. It got onto Sci-Fi, and I thought it did a whole lot better once it got onto Sci-Fi. It started on Showtime. It was great on Showtime. When it went to network, it kind of died. And then Sci-Fi took it over. And they did a lot of good things. I'm not that they had the show that they had to work with, but they were able to do more with it. And it was really great. That being said, you can hate it as much as you want. I totally give you free reign to hate that show. But having seen the miniseries, parts of the miniseries, and then seeing what is a spoiler, because they were spoiling a piece of thing from the show, but if you were watching it, it wasn't a spoiler. It was, I saw one of the characters with an eye patch, and I was like, why the fuck does he have an eye patch? And honestly, that was what, I was like, well, now I have to watch the show.
Okay, so now I don't feel so bad about mine. You were brought on board by an eye patch.
And the thing was, is that the eye patch, I was like, that's so silly. They have to explain it some way. They have to, because there's no way. So I was like, I'll give it a try.
Yeah. You were brought on board by an eye patch.
Yes.
Let's
and how are you?
This is where I feel ashamed.
Here's the thing, though. Let's preface this with, I watched it. I decided to watch it from the miniseries and went straight through all of the show and actually watched it. I watched it seriously, like, day to day, was watching an episode almost every day until I got caught up with the show. in its fourth season, which is this last season.
Which has just ended last night.
It ended, yes, last night.
We are recording this today is March 21st, 2009.
At around 6 p.m.
At around 6 p.m. You know, we're 10 minutes in the show, and I don't think I ever gave you your official introduction. So let me
Everyone, if you're going to hit the pause button, if you haven't already, wait until he introduces me at least.
Yeah, let the man have his moment. I'll let him stay on for a few more minutes after that. But ladies and gentlemen, you know, back when we first started this show last summer, we had kind of a revolving door of guests for those three episodes. We had guests of the four episodes we made. And those were, of course, the brothers Syak, Mark and Jesse. Mark and Jesse were both with me for one episode, and Jesse for three, counting that one. And they are back home. I am currently at my university of choice in a city that is 3 hours away from my own. So there's a whole new cast of characters, and part of that cast is a man that I've known for almost 4 years now.
Almost 4 years, yeah.
We met, I believe, during our school's film festival course.
We've known each other for 4 years because we met my freshman year.
In film
and
festival.
And I'm graduating now, but we met in the film festival, which was the first semester of my freshman year.
Of my freshman year as well.
And your freshman year as well.
I'll go ahead and give him the intro, and then I'll keep telling the story. I'm going to be dramatic. Anything to kill the time, give people something to listen to until we get really spoilerish. This fella, months went by. We sort of knew each other offhand from film festival courses, and then my cousin Phil moved into the area and was a man who's like, we've got to get to know people. I've got to be a man of the people.
Can I preface a little bit of this? I knew him occasionally and casually from the festival, but there was never a moment where it was like, hey, let's go get some lunch or some dinner.
Because I was a social shut-in.
Yes.
In freshman year, let's be completely honest. Especially the first semester. Second semester, it all started with Phil. Phil sort of broadened my social horizons. And as part of that, on a little late in the semester, he's like, well, you know, we gotta get some people together and do something crazy. And we were thinking of some people. I think did he have a class with you? No, we were all in Jellic Course's development of cinema.
Yes, but none of us sat together, and that class, you're not allowed to sit. You're assigned seating from the very beginning.
Exactly.
You don't meet anyone in that class unless you sit next to them. And
exactly, and it was just a wacky, crazy course of events. The point is, Phil calls this my guest up here, and
so I'm gonna have to admit this right now. I honestly thought that for some strange reason, that Phil was gay and that you were trying to set me up with him. I don't know.
I was not aware of this part.
Because it was just a really awkward sort of, like, it seemed like a very forced situation. Where I was hanging out with him.
I don't have the
really
initiative to force that situation. So.
But Phil sort of, like, in a weird sort of blind date-y way, we hung out. And I was like, I don't even know. So I thought going into it that he was gay and that this was some sort of weird blind date. But he's not gay. No, let's not him and haw about this. He's not gay, and it was just really awkward for me for a little while. But we became friends because of it.
And we all sort of started hanging out as a group eventually.
Yeah.
My dear cousin Stephanie, Phil's sister, was sort of brought into the mix, and everything sort of started coming together.
Right.
And all kind of culminated with your reading day party back in 05. May 05.
My reading day party.
You had a reading day party at your old house.
At my old house, which was that. Wait, okay, so this was still like near freshman year.
No, 06. Sorry. Yes, reading day 06.
Yeah, and I had a party at my house. And Phil was like, well, then let's get this party going. And I invited all of my friends, and Phil had invited all of his friends, / Jeffrey here. And I mean, I already knew Jeffrey, and he was one of my friends, so he was totally invited, and it was all good. And then we all had this party at my house, and hijinks ensued.
Interpretive dances were done to the Tarzan soundtrack.
Which was really the most pleasant experience of that night.
We played Spin the Bottle with a group of people.
We sure did. I made out with Stephanie that night.
I kissed at least two of our acquaintances.
Grace was one of them.
So okay, make that three. I forgot about that one.
Yeah. Which, Grace, you probably don't even know about this podcast, but if you're listening, you have awesome tits. I do recall that from that night. It was really great. And as opposed to, we don't want to get you thinking that I am some crazy guy, this was one of the only parties that we had that I've ever, I don't do a whole lot of parties, but when I do them well.
Yeah.
So,
but
all of this continues and we all become a group of friends.
And then over the summer that followed, you and Phil and Phil's girlfriend Tiffany's a former acquaintance of Stephanie from her days at Catawba College.
We hung out a lot.
And it all sort of came together, and eventually when that
And I started came, living with them in the fall. Them,
and thus the story began. So before we go on to any of that, because that's a podcast into itself.
Really?
Ladies and gentlemen, after all of that, Mr. Greg Green.
Hi, guys. Thank you.
Mr. Greg Green.
Hold your applause.
A man who grew up in a very similar or very geographically similar place to mine.
And I would say a fairly socially similar place. It's a very, very restrictive place called Franklin, North Carolina. And it's conservative and crazy. And I was gay and didn't realize I was a liberal until much later, but was a liberal. And, and it just didn't really mesh very well until I came here to UNCG and studied film. I am a film student. I'm actually taking a course that I have self-titled and self-purposed called it's a course studying the role of President Rosalind in Battlestar Galactica. So, not to say that I know of which I speak. But I am studying that of which I speak. So
he's a scholar of what we're going to be talking about today, and I think we finally reached that point.
I think we're kind of there.
I think, and just for the record, I don't know. As I told you folks, this is the first one we've recorded. We're actually going to be this will be the second one you hear. But we're recording it first, so I don't know what we've talked about, what you've just heard if you listened to the one before this. Maybe we expanded on that story we were just telling. Maybe. Who's to say what happened? But right now...
Really, who's to say? But yes.
Right now, I invite all of you who have never seen Battlestar Galactica, who have no interest in seeing Battlestar Galactica...
For those of you who have interest in seeing it...
But haven't.
You should probably turn off
your
iPod.
Yeah, turn off. The spoiler alarm is ringing. We're about to start talking about it. If you stayed and you haven't seen it... I don't know what to tell you.
If you don't care about it but are enjoying what we're talking about, then just feel free, because we're going to talk about a lot of stuff.
I kind of want to stab you in the jaw, but I'll forgive you.
That being said, not everyone's into sci-fi, and if you're not into sci-fi, then that's cool.
First off, spoiler.
Good stuff.
Spoiler has begun.
Spoiler alert.
Wall is down. Spoiler wall, push stop, go listen to A Media Monkeys and Junkie Junkies or another of our episodes.
Go find out who Rachel Maddow is and start watching her because I'm in love with her.
Go buy the complete series of The Middleman off of iTunes. Now, spoiler wall.
Okay.
We begin.
We start with the spoilers.
So, you were just...
Oh my god!
I do want to kind of, before we... I mean, this is going to be spoilerific too, but I want to touch on something you were just kind of talking about. Here's the thing. I mean, Battlestar Galactica was on Sci-Fi Channel. But and
I think we can still talk about it in terms of is because
there's
repercussions and there's going to be another show.
There's a TV movie on its way, a prequel spinoff that is coming out next year called Caprica, the pilot movie of which will be available on DVD in the next couple of weeks. And we're going to have to find access to that.
Oh yes, very much.
But anyway, he mentioned it's on Sci-Fi Channel, and the thing, and you know, of course you know that. If you know television, you at the very least know that Battlestar Galactica is a show that was on the Sci-Fi Channel. And here's the thing: I mean, barring their ridiculous recent decision to rename Sci-Fi Channel SYFY, you also say it as Sci-Fi, but is now spelled SYFY because they're lame like that.
I was unaware of this, but that is extremely lame.
Oh!
I just found out about this.
That's this right here?
As of what you just said.
I thought you were there. Okay, well, I'll tell you. NBC Universal announced on, I believe it was Tuesday of this week, that as of July 15th, I want to say, they are renaming the Sci-Fi Channel, as we know, with SCIFI, with the Saturn rings kind of around the logo, to just a straight, it's just going to be the letters, S uppercase S, lowercase y, uppercase F, lowercase y, sci-fi. And they're trying to say that the reason why they want to do it is because they want to keep the channel from being pigeonholed into just sci-fi programming. If you just change the letters of something and it still sounds like you're saying something that sounds like something, you've not changed a damn thing.
No.
In fact, you made it more retarded is what you've done.
This is the whole problem I have with Nat Geo. Because they're like, because it's the National Geographic Channel,
and
but...
It's still officially named that.
It's still officially named that, but no one is allowed to call it that, really.
Except for
Cesar Millan, because
National
he says
Geographic
it so well.
Channel.
It's a National
Geographic
Channel. But every, like, all the announcers have to call it Nat Geo, and I'm just like, that's... You haven't changed anything, you've just made it stupider. You made it sound more stupid. And it's the same thing as the Blackwater turning into Z thing. You can't change the name of something and make it different.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't make it a different thing.
So yeah, sci-fi, S-Y-F-Y.
Stupid-fi, but okay.
I don't want to go up on a tangent on this, but I mean, we had the time to do it, but I don't want to go up on too much of a tangent on this, but am I keeping you from anything?
No, not at all.
I mean, are you free to discuss various things for a long
time? We are more than
welcome
to discuss.
So, but anyway, yes, S-Y-F-Y. And the thing about that it concerns me is, like, they said they're trying to step away from the image that Sci-Fi Channel holds right now. Which is...
Make shitty programming and you won't have a shitty image.
Well, that's kind of what they're going... Well, like, they're kind of saying backhandedly, but, like, what they're suggesting is they're going to get rid of their original movies. Or at least the ones as we know them now. Which I'm actually kind of sad about, because I need... something, if I'm bored on a Saturday night, to laugh my ass off at, I can tune into Sci-Fi, S-C-I-F-I, and see a movie like Rottweiler, which I will talk about on a later date.
Or, what was that? Cerebus.
Cerebus, or...
Oh my god.
Kraken, Terror of the Deep.
There's a specific campiness to that that is what has made sci-fi as much money as it has.
And it's so fucking great. And the thing is that
what's great about sci-fi also, let's just say, is that along with all of their shitty content, they also have true gems of television.
They certainly do.
And you kind of have to weed through it, but that's part of the process of, like, finding really awesome stuff that they do. And I really think it's just going to limit their audience.
Not only that, what I was kind of getting at just now is that they're going to change their program.
Yeah, they're like, getting rid of the...
They're not, like, I mean, they're going to get rid of the original movies, but, like, they're really going to start turning it into... It's essentially going to be USA Network 2. In that, for all we know, and I mean, I say this loving this particular show, for all we know, you might start seeing reruns of 30 Rock at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Sci-Fi. That's kind of what...
That's not pleasant.
That's what I'm saying. That's what they're kind of getting at, is that it's going to become, like, the cable home for NBC Universal programming. I mean, USA kind of has that going for them right now, but, I mean, in terms of specifically NBC Universal programming, Sci-Fi, S-Y-F-Y, is going to become the home for that. That's what they're kind of getting at. Now, they do have, of course, Stargate Universe coming out. They have Caprica, which is the prequel spinoff series we were discussing a few minutes ago. They have The Plan, which is the Battlestar Galactica TV movie coming out about a week before they changed the name, and they've got a show coming out called Warehouse 13, something like that. It's like, it's kind of like an Indiana Jones archaeology.
So it's still going to be a sci-fi. They're still going to produce sci-fi. Their original programming is still going to be sci-fi.
Yes, and ECW.
And ECW, oh, well, yeah. Which I have never understood on the Sci-Fi Channel.
As a publicly outed WWE fan, I understand, I agree that it's ridiculous that it's on Sci-Fi. I mean, I guess S-Y-F-Y makes it okay now. But, I mean, I always chalked it up to the fact that it's an NBC Universal property, and they just had nowhere else to put it. I mean, that's honestly the way I looked at it. They also, because, not to go off on another tangent, but ECW, as it were, I mean, I know you don't know too much about the wrestling business, but ECW, I mean, we watched The Wrestler, and what you saw,
yeah,
like those bloody matches with, like, the mirrors and the,
right,
and the barbed wire, I mean, that's what ECW used to be. It was the most violent federation in the United States. And I guess what Sci-Fi Channel's logic was when they first brought it to Sci-Fi in 2006 was it's super violent, like a lot of the lame horror movies we show. Let's put it here. And now,
okay,
Vince McMahon and his team of writers, I guess, have completely changed DCW. Not, I mean, I still like it. As a wrestling fan, I love it. I think it's still better than TNA on Spike TV, which is just a shit one better. But, I mean, they don't really do the Extreme Rules matches. They don't never see blood anymore. It's really just straight wrestling.
Okay.
Which makes it even more of a weird fit on SCIFI, but I guess they're trying to say it'll be okay on SYFY. So,
that's... I mean, aside from it being the weirdest thing to put on sci-fi I could ever see, it's still... That doesn't make it any better that they're changing the name.
No, I mean, I'm just saying... I honestly feel like that... If it weren't for anything else, I would say this is just their lame way of saying, now, suck on that, America.
Well, no,
the wrestling show is not on the science fiction channel.
I just, like, to me, if they were going to add fantasy programming to it, I could understand it a bit. If they were going to add, maybe, like, well, mostly fantasy, because sci-fi and fantasy are two genres that are very closely linked. And I've always wanted a place for good fantasy programming that is, like, not Xena Warrior Princess /... Hercules.
The legendary
Hercules. You know, good fantasy programming, which the only place I could see it being would be the Sci-Fi Channel, but then Sci-Fi has been very specific to the sci-fi genre.
Yeah.
Opening it up to fantasy would be great, and I could see them changing the name, but that's not what they're going to do. They're just going to take a whole bunch of their old shitty content that has nothing, or good content.
Dirty Rock is good.
But old content... And just throw it up onto another channel that they have.
I'm trying to think of a good example. It's kind of like MTV. It's not music television anymore. It's
right.
Reality television and two music videos at 3:30 in the morning.
Right.
That's MTV now. VH1, Video Hits 1. Do you see any more music videos other than The Nocturnal State from 3 to 5 in the morning or the Top 20 Countdown on Saturdays? You don't.
No.
I guess this is their way of sort of turning into MTV and VH1.
Well, that being said, MTV VH1 was fairly stifled in it wouldn't have as much of a draw, because if people had already seen these music videos, why watch them again necessarily? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can understand why MTV and VH1 did that. I think that they destroyed music in general,
yeah,
first of all,
certainly.
But, you know, they, that being said, they... As a channel, it makes sense, like, to add original programming / reality TV, which is completely unoriginal, but original in air quotes.
Indeed. But you know what I just realized?
We haven't actually talked about Battlestar Galactica.
No, we
at all.
Haven't. Not at all. I feel like this is almost fodder for what should have been the first episode, but of the new run of the original.
Well, all of this being said, let's talk about
Battlestar Galactica. Seriously, if you have not turned this off, spoiler wall, bitches. We're gonna start talking for reals,
like for real reals, not for play. Okay.
So I don't know where to start. First off, I want to ask a couple questions.
Go ahead.
Because you. Greg here, we've been watching Battlestar Galactica together for about the past... Since it came back and since you came back to Greensboro.
Yes.
We've been watching Battlestar Galactica. Now, I've been watching it before, and I've just enjoyed it because it's one hell of a show. But you've brought a very different sort of view into my world for this show. You brought a very philosophical, very theological view into this world. And I love it. It really brought me a lot closer to this show. Like, I feel like I've seen a deeper meaning of a lot of things. And one thing I want to talk about... And once again, this is purely for people who have just seen, and maybe you haven't even seen the whole series. Maybe you're like me and you started in the third season, which I still need to get to that part. That's what one thing
right.
we're going to talk about. Sophomore year, or my first attempt at sophomore year, back in fall 06. I'm sitting in my dorm room with my old roommate Dickhead, whose name will not be named here. And we're watching ECW on Sci-Fi. When a commercial for the third season of Battlestar Galactica comes on, and this is the sad part. The show always looked intriguing. I won't deny that. I always looked intriguing. But...
We are both sci-fi nerds here.
Been a comic book geek. This would have happened naturally, I feel, eventually, but this is what brought it on in this sense. We were watching ECW on Sci-Fi. Commercial comes on. Do you remember... I know you weren't watching it back then, but this may have actually been the same commercial you saw with Ty with his eye patch.
going, I'm a Bracken Zylon!
Okay, that's actually later than that. But do you remember back in 06 when season 3, maybe it was 3.5.
Because I think it was almost start of season 4 where I came in.
Yeah,
go ahead.
But do you remember when they had ads running? Just montages of all the crazy shit that was about to go down on New Caprica, overstored by, what's the fucking song name? I actually have it on my iTunes. Pardon the clicking, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, I won't need it. I don't know if you can hear that rubbing. I've got this new Mac with
Let's be clear here. He is not rubbing anything sensitive.
I'm rubbing the all-powerful one-touch track bar thing that's been added to the new Mac. Just, it's all one mouse, one big button, and it's a lot easier to scroll through things. I want to get the exact name of this song, because this song is almost solely the reason why I started watching Battlestar Galactica, which makes it that much sadder when you find out what song it is. Yes, Saving Me by Nickelback.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
I've always been a big fan of, like, a well-placed song.
Yes.
In a situation. That song, accompanied with the footage they were showing of them kicking ass on New Caprica, I was like, I have to see this. They did it. It was good advertising.
Yes,
I will say
good,
that.
And they've always had good advertising.
Sci-Fi knows how to advertise their programming.
Let me say, in the last season, it's been, I think, some of the best, like, salesmanship and advertising that's gone on with Sci-Fi, because what they have done is they've run a whole bunch of ads that have taken up ad space, which would normally have been taken up with, like, some crappy commercial about Affleck.
Indeed.
And instead said, hey, come to the Sci-Fi website and buy shit from the show that's really awesome. Like, buy Colonel Ty's uniform, or buy Ambrosia.
Buy a frack off t-shirt.
Buy a frack off t-shirt.
Gosh, I want a frack off t-shirt.
I have to take a moment here and talk about Carrie Lynn Serta. She is... We have a film festival here, and she's one of the judges of the film festival. She showed up to Comic-Con wearing a Frack Me t-shirt, and someone took a picture, and it is on her screensaver, and I have seen it, and it is the best thing I have ever seen in the entire world, because she has big old titties, I'm just gonna say. I hope she never hears this, but she does, and... It was hilarious and awesome, and I just had a moment of geekdom in it. I'm gay, by the way, so that's kind of weird, but just side note to that.
But yes,
anyway.
Frag off t-shirts. The one thing we were talking about, and this isn't a divulge, we're talking about Battlestar Galactica, so I feel like we should talk about this. Do you remember a couple weeks ago when I sent you a link to an ad or a bit of information about the Battlestar Galactica 4 game?
You did, and I don't really recall what it was.
Okay, I just remember your reaction was, holy fuck, can we play it right now?
Yes, that seemed to be something along
because here
those
is
lines.
The basic layout of the Battlestar Galactica board game they put out based on this particular series, as I understand it. The plot of the game, the point of the game, is that you play it with a number of people, and what they don't know is that certain people, you get cards kind of doling out what you're going to be at the beginning of the game. It's in many ways, it's a role-playing game. Very expansive board
kind
game.
Kind of like Clue, but yeah, no.
A lot like, it's like Clue with a lot more shit.
Yes.
Plus it's about Battlestar Galactica. And the thing about the board game is, it is established at the very beginning of the game, and not everybody knows it, or they can tell if they want. Certain people are Cylons.
And certain people are humans.
And the game is pretty much the plot of the show, surviving while there might be Cylons ready to shoot Admiral Adama at any moment in the stomach in end season 1. Yeah. That's pretty much what it is. And so
Boomer.
It's a mystery. It's a role-playing game. It looks badass. And the problem is the board game itself costs $40.
Wow.
$40. Now, I mean, considering how much shit is in that board game, they show you what's inside the box, even though they have a display. You know, look at the box
lid
and look at all the shit's inside it. There's a lot of stuff in that box. It's not just cards and a board. There are figures, and I mean, it might as well be a damn D&D campaign. I mean,
right.
It's
well, that's what it sounds like. It sounds a lot like
it's D&D. Like Battlestar Galactica D&D, which is a real thing. Apart from that, I'm gonna go ahead and kind of come out to my listeners right now that
he plays Dungeons and Dragons,
and I never thought I would. I mean, I'm not that guy. I'm certainly not LARPing or anything. One of my roommates, my dear friend, Mr. Dustin Gregg, I know him as Norm. is a big fan of D&D. He's been since he was a kid, and over the past few months, he's sort of gotten the roommates into it, so he can, you know, keep fresh, keep playing, and it's just something to do when we're bored and need something to do. And it's been fun, but something he told me is that there's the Dungeons and Dragons as it currently stands runs on a system called D20, which is a it's the 20-sided dice, of course, everybody knows about that, and it's the code name for Dungeons and Dragons kind of standard is just D20. There's something called D20 Modern, which is a modern world, so on and so forth. But he told me that a lot of people, a lot of career creative people, have come up with variations on D&D based on a number of things. There's actually an official Star Wars D&D that has come out recently, and he told me that he's read online very expansive lists of people who come up with campaigns for a BSG D&D.
That sounds kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah, which it intrigued the fuck out of me. I went online and looked it up, and I mean, it looks pretty awesome. I mean, it's all user-created content, because clearly you can't use any of the, like, the pre-established Wizards of the Coast D&D stuff, but it's D20 BSG. I'm very intrigued. I'd like to look into it in about a later date, but...
Oh, I could definitely see a World of Warcraft-type idea in Caprica City.
An MMO, yeah.
Like,
they're about to come out with a Star Trek MMO and a Stargate MMO. Were you aware of this?
I was not aware of this.
Stargate MMO. A lot of the game critics are saying that it's probably going to be the best new MMO of this year.
Oh, well, that sounds delightful.
I know you...
I'm a Stargate fan.
He enjoys his Stargate.
In certain terms. I see Stargate as a lot of people see Buffy. It's very campy, but it deals with a lot of really interesting stuff, and is a fun show to watch. Why
Indeed.
Not?
So, but yeah, Stargate, MMO, and there's... we can only hope there's a BSG MMO coming down the road.
Oh my goodness. I would actually play that.
I would too. I'm so in love with this show, I can't even begin. And we've barely begun. So the question I was going to ask the question I was going to ask you before I went off on that Nickelback tangent. Once again, my apologies for that being my impetus. But keep in mind, it's an awesome show, and any way you can find it is probably worth it. What the hell were they saying with Kara disappearing on the planes? Lee's talking to her, and she just disappears.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so
what do you feel?
This is from the very last episode.
This is the one thing that has been stuck in my mind since the episode was over, is what... Actually, I got two of these, but this is the first one. One, what the hell happened to Kara? Was she dead? Was she a spirit that everyone was seeing?
Well, okay, first of all, we have these angels idea.
The angels,
Baltar and Caprica.
If you watch the show, you're listening, you know what we're talking about. Baltar and Caprica 6. Caprica 6 especially has been, I guess, Baltar's angel for the past couple of seasons. Just like,
and Baltar has been Caprica 6's angel
As we learned in this episode, and it was awesome.
No. We've learned it.
Have we always known this?
That's been part of the show.
I just haven't seen him in a while.
That was part of the show in season 4. When they go back, at the beginning of season 4, they go back, or maybe season 3. Season 3 and 4.
Right.
Where they go back to after she dies and comes back, she sees him in that suit.
That suit he was wearing did look very familiar. So yeah, you're right.
So they have been each other's...
People that characters see that no one else can see, who seem to be guiding them in a certain direction. And this has been a recurring theme in this show.
Right, except for with Kara, who everyone can see.
Yes.
But I see it as Kara has been... Kara obviously is an angel, but...
But
I
she
think
can physically touch things.
But she's an angel that can physically touch things... I mean,
Didn't she have sex with someone in this angelic state?
Yeah, she did. She was a manifestation that was a touch and feel manifestation as opposed to... But this is not uncommon among, you know, biblical things.
This is true.
There is a lot of... It is very interesting because while she was able to touch and feel and actually had a physical presence, she was a physical manifestation, the other two were only visual manifestations and only to certain people. So,
do you feel that the... I guess we're going to say it now. The angel Kara. Starbuck.
Yes.
Kara Thrace, the love of my life. I've got to put that out there. She's the love of my life.
I am mildly indifferent to her,
I love her.
I like her, and then she's good, and I like her storyline even more now that I know the end of it.
Do you feel that the suggestion was made? This is what I was gathering. Because I was thinking sort of maybe she was... something in the same vein as Baltar or Capricola. Do you feel that she was sent to them specifically to guide only Liadama? Or guide him to guide everyone else? Because that's kind of what I was gathering from that last conversation.
She was sent back so that they would find Earth. Like, that is...
But was she sent there sort of specifically for Leah Dama, do you feel?
She was sent there, I think, for Leah Dama to have closure, and I think we all know that, Leah Dama has... well, maybe you don't. Leah Dama has... was in... I think somewhere in season 2 or season 3. I'm gonna go with season 3. He was starting to be slightly suicidal and very depressed. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that he couldn't be with Kara, but a lot of it had to do with the fact that he just didn't care about life anymore.
That was that may have been that's just after he's married to what's her name, and he's got the big fat gut, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even remember her name.
D.
Yeah, he was married to D. And with Kara, I mean, she's always been sort of a love of his life.
Yes.
But the specific parts where she returns, I think, were when she comes back, it is very much for Lee to go on and actually care about life. Because at the very last episode, you hear him saying, "I want to explore. I want to
She's
go
reawakened
out.
His happiness.
And she was the reason that happened. And then the fact that she just disappears is something that is, I think, very, very poignant during the time period. Like, when he was actually saying, "I want to go and explore and I want to go do this." And one of the things that couldn't have happened is he couldn't have explored because he would have, not that Kara needs taking care of, but if he had settled down with a family, he couldn't have explored.
But this does raise a question.
And,
do you feel that she was a self-aware? Because clearly, because, I mean, when she was playing piano
with
her
she
father...
Oh, no, she had to have been self-aware. She was not aware that she was an angel, and...
I mean, she always knew something was off ever since she found her corpse in the Viper down there on First Earth.
But then again, here's the thing. She was just on the other side. As everyone has said, "Let's go to the... I'll see you on the other side." She was simply
Sam Anders
coming
in
from the other side.
Yeah.
And this other side is the whole point of the show, which is everything has happened before and everything will happen again. And it's just the process cycles and cycles and cycles. And sometimes it changes, but it still cycles. Like, there's still things that are... Everything is cyclical, and the idea that all of life, including the life we live now, including the life that everything came from somewhere else that was the same as what we had. It's the idea that... And it's something that's really interesting. It's been proven... There's a scientific discovery that it's possible that our own universe simply came from an older version of another universe.
It's the running theme of it's all happened before.
It's all
happened
again. And the thing is, I don't want to mince these things or confuse you. There's actually been physical, in a Scientific American that I read, physical evidence that there was, that the universe bounced from another universe. In essence, like...
We jumped?
It went to a singularity and then came back. Jumping is a good idea.
Yeah.
A nice way to say that, yes. We were one
lay
thing.
In the hot tub.
Jump! Jump!
The hybrid. I'm sorry, I keep...
There is nothing and there is everything and all things come to one point and jump!
I've been calling her the lady in the hot tub for the past couple weeks. I know she's the hybrid, but I've been calling her the lady in the hot tub for the longest time.
Yeah, she's a lady in a hot tub and she controls...
With no physical body, just a head and kind of a torso that kind of ends and turns into pipes.
Right. It's really...
Which always freaked me out when they started putting Sam Anders in the tub. I was like, is this... lower half of his body going to deteriorate and he's going to become part of pipes?
Possibly, but then he's in the sun now.
Yeah,
he's
driven the entire fleet into the sun.
So that's maybe it would have happened. The thing I have to say is that I love that they have been playing around with what time period we are in.
It's very lost, isn't it?
Up until this, the very last episode, you weren't sure if this was supposed to be taking place at the same time as we are in currently.
Like an alternate
Earth. Like, if it was an alternate Earth, or, say, let's say a concurrent, like, they were, but the same time frame. If they were in our current day, just millions of miles away, or were they millions, thousands, hundreds of thousands of years in the future?
And it turns out that, like what a lot of people thought the original series was ripping off, this too was in a galaxy far, far away, a long time ago.
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. 150,000 years ago, specifically at the dawn of humans.
Yes.
There's very important.
They land in Africa, early African tribes with their spears.
We only see the part in Africa.
Yeah.
They actually land in Africa and Australia and...
They land everywhere.
Various other places. They land everywhere and start building their new civilization.
Well, speaking of the 150,000 years, that raises another question, slash it sort of answers the one I had. Baltar and Caprica are still around 150,000 years from now. Are we to assume that they're angels?
Those are the angels, definitely the angels, because they were still wearing the same
I just wanted to confirm that.
And they were still, like, haloed in light. By the way, at the very end of the episode, if you don't know who Ronald D. Moore is by now...
The creator of this
fantastic show. He was the creator of the show, and... has not been seen in the show.
And there he is.
Up until the very last moment.
Stand in front of Caprica and Baltar, just reading away at, like, Popular Mechanics or something.
I think maybe a Scientific American.
Which would be awesome, actually.
He's reading some sort of science journal, and he is looking at it and is talking about what has to be Hera, who is apparently the Eve of humanity. Hera is, because her mitochondrial genetics as well as her regular genetics, which is really interesting, I have to say. Mitochondrial DNA.
Yeah, that starts to suggest that we
are human hybrids.
Cylon hybrids.
Human Cylon hybrids.
But we're not in hot tubs.
We are
unless
human,
we choose to be.
She wasn't a hybrid. She was hybrided with the.
Oh, I know, but that.
Yes,
you know,
we're not in hot tubs. It's a different type
we're not,
of hybrid.
Yeah, it's a different. It's like, you know, it's a difference between a Cylon XB and a Honda Ridgeline.
Yes, sure.
Cylon TC!
But no, that the mitochondria of our bodies, which I don't. You have to know something about biology and microbiology. But there are two types of DNA that exist in people. One type of DNA is your regular DNA that is part of what constructs you.
Indeed.
The other type of DNA is mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondria exist inside your cells
and are part of you. We're trying to say that mitochondria came from Cylons.
I think what we're saying is mitochondria came from Cylons. And
what they proposed, I mean...
Which is really interesting. You should really look up
for
mitochondria
those,
DNA.
Yeah.
Mitochondria... and humans.
But
and
for
it's
those
really
of you,
interesting pair.
Clearly, if you're listening at this point, you either don't care about this show, just want to hear us talk some more, or you have seen the show, and you know that what we've just seen included a scene in which, on an MSNBC news report, nice touch, they are reporting on the discovery of the mitochondrial Eve, is that what they called her? And this was actually...
No, that was in the Scientific American, and then they cut over to the
MSNBC
spot that's all about robotics and the new... And these are all robotics that are currently out right now.
And they
now.
Do this fantastic montage that's out of nowhere with Jimi Hendrix's version of All on the Watchtower, which has been a long time in coming to this damn show.
Right.
Overscoring just these shots of all the different robots we've actually created now.
That are smart robots.
Exactly. Like awesome,
I put smart in air quotes.
You know, like,
they
you
are
know,
smart
like
Osimo robots.
By Honda. Even like... shitty toy robots, like, you know, Dinosaurus Rex robots.
But
ones that
are able to see and respond to humans.
And are they trying to say that they're going to rebel and kill us?
Thoughtful sort of way.
That we're going to start procreating them?
Well, it's the idea that this is the cyclical process.
It's all happened before and it will all happen again.
It's all happened before and it will all happen again.
Son of a bitch!
You can't get away from it. It's all happened before.
But are they trying to say that it's going to happen 150,000 years at a time?
Perhaps this is what has happened. This is the amount of time that it takes before what I think it is saying is that 150,000 years is where it got to us to now, but it's not
but
much further before a system, that's how much time it takes for a system to corrupt itself and then has to be completely wiped out and started over.
And we did talk...
Which is kind of scary, because that means we're getting to the end of it.
Which, is, you know, we were talking about this a couple nights ago, or a couple weeks ago, even when we were watching BSG. We were talking about, I'm a big, you know, puss about this, and I think a lot of people are actually, which is the fabled December 21st, 2012.
Being the end of all
being
humanity.
Being the end of all things, because the Mayan calendar coming to an end. We were discussing that, and this is something that a lot of people have said, that it's not so much that maybe it'll be the end of the world, that maybe it's going to be people reaching a new sort of consciousness. And
that is actually the prevailing thought.
Yeah.
Not that it will be the end of the world. It's also a thought that there is a Mayan calendar that was able to calculate a lot of things up until, and one of it was a calendar, up until the year 2012.
Which I suddenly just realized the correlation between that and the prophecies in this show. All the things that Rosalind was obsessed with for the majority of the show.
Well,
it's all very
the
Mayan.
Of 12.
It's
the
all very Mayan
thing.
Calendar.
And yes, it is a very Mayan calendar thing, but it is one of the things that is a concurrent theme is there was 12 tribes that...
12 colonies, 12 everything.
That came from one, which was a 13th tribe, which was the tribe of Kobal, which was a... Kobal was gods and humans living together. So... put that in your pipe and smoke it, because you'll probably be smoking a lot more come 2012.
Yep, swirl that softly and gently around your right nipples.
Right. Best line ever of a show.
Line. Frisky Dingo, folks.
Frisky Dingo is a great show, by the way. Anyway.
One thing I was just thinking about.
But there's the idea that there's this 13th idea. This is... the 12 is not the end, and that there is no real end
to
anything.
13th tribe, the 13th Cylon, Daniel, I believe.
Daniel,
said.
Who's the 13th Cylon, who we never meet.
But, that's what I was just about to say. This even further feeds my theory that Daniel is Daniel Greystone.
From
Caprica.
The show Caprica
the prequel
that will
series
come out.
Caprica that comes out next January from the Illinois Skin pilot movie comes out on DVD in a couple weeks, and we've got to get access to it. I mean, I'm sure it'll be available on iTunes. I'm not going to guarantee it'll be on iTunes. Caprica, which is a prequel series. But then there's also this TV movie coming up in July that I mentioned before, the SCIFISYFY changeover.
Called
The Plan. Which is apparently going to explain sort of how the Cylons planned to do all this crazy shit.
Yes.
Which is what I was kind of thinking. I honestly feel like that scene we saw late in the last episode where real Baltar and real Caprica are standing in front of that building, and he's talking about, I'll give you the plans. And I'm wondering if that's sort of what that was the precursor to the plan.
I think it's all going to be part of it, and her employers, which is implied that it's obviously the Cylons, would really enjoy getting into the mainframe. But it's just...
there's always a mainframe.
There's always a mainframe.
Just a few more minutes to hack in the mainframe.
Rerouted
me into Friendster.
Anyway.
Did I really just made a... I'm so sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay. But anyway, this whole plan thing is, I think, going to be... now that I've seen the end of the show, I definitely think the plan is going to, like, take back... like, it's gonna say, okay, all of this was really heavy. Let's take a lighter note on... Not a comical note, but a much more like...
so it's going to kind of be kind of
like... action-y and less thought-provoking note.
So it's
going to
be more like if the Cylons were plotting in comical fashions, like, oh shit, I shouldn't say what I'm about to say because you have not gotten there in Buffy yet. So never mind.
I wouldn't say comical fashions. I would say it's much more going to be about
those wacky Cylons and their ideas.
Sort of in more of a... in less of a wacky sense. It's more of a, this was plot that we are going to get to that was precursor plot. And it was, but it's going to be much more about the actual plot outline as opposed to, you know, deep thought about things. It's going to be much more, here's how they actually planned to destroy all of humankind. Not why they planned it, but just how they planned it.
This is a moment where I'm suddenly thinking of one thought that I've had. Well, now that we're at the end, now that I've seen all I've seen, there's one thought I want to make, and that is this. I cannot, for the life of me, and maybe you can because you've watched the whole thing. For the record, ladies and gentlemen, if you're you know disputing my ability to discuss this, for the record, I mean, I've always been the guy who knows things too much about things he may not have even seen. But also the fact that I have every intention of purchasing what will surely be a $200 complete series box set this summer.
I would love to have that. I don't have the money
I'm definitely buying it, and I will see every season, all the miniseries. I will see everything. But what I was about to say is, what I've seen thus far, this show has yet to have disappointed me. Ever. It may have disappointed you.
I'm trying to... Let me actually... cut you off here, because there was a point in time, which was actually end of season 2, beginning of season 3.
I know a lot of people had issues
with Caprica.
A lot of people had issues with New Caprica.
I was massively disappointed at the end of season 2, because I thought that they were changing the show into, like, something that was not Battlestar Galactica-centric. It wasn't going to be centered inside a Battlestar, and there wasn't going to be wars. It was going to be about developing a society, which, of its own accord, has importance and is interesting, but they moved away from that idea quickly enough that I was less disappointed, and ever since then, they have the references that they have put about New Caprica have really, it was a point of change for a lot of people, and it has a validity to it. It just isn't necessarily something that, I'm just glad that they didn't take too much time to deal with it.
Yeah.
And they got back to what was essential to the story, Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
So that was the only sort of a disappointment, but really wasn't a disappointment.
Because
you have to go.
Exactly.
You have to ride it out. Yeah, you have to ride out things.
And this is what I was talking about, and I guess it's sort of a ride it out mentality in the very same way. Is just what I mean is. There are things that there are questions we still don't have answered right now. Like Daniel.
Who is Daniel, yes.
Even though it's probably going to be Daniel Greystone. But...
most of the questions were...
I'm saying the ones that weren't answered, I don't care.
Yeah.
And I've never felt that way about a show that left things hanging. Because I've always just been angry and like, damn it, why didn't you answer that question? I mean, that's why a lot of people are concerned, just for an example. And this is... And I mean... I say this, okay, I'll put it this way. Lost is ending next year.
Yes.
The final season of Lost starts next January, and we're still in the middle of the fifth of six seasons. A lot of people have already said, here's a show that, in typical J.J. Abrams fashion, and I love J.J. Abrams, but they are going to leave a lot of big questions unanswered. They're going to forget certain questions needed to be answered. And this is something that I want to say, the testament to Ronald D. Moore and David Icke. I want to say they... knew exactly what questions needed to be answered, how many. They paid attention. I feel like these are two dudes who took notes. This is the way say with me.
I think it comes down to something less than it's not something that is a accidental thing that they.
Oh,
that,
I know we talked about
that. J.J. Abrams hasn't answered questions,
but I'm saying like in terms.
J.J. Abrams doesn't want to answer questions.
Exactly, but what I'm saying is in terms of like comparing these two shows. This is actually a very. In many ways, they're very similar shows, now that I'm seeing a lot of the big picture. Lost and Battlestar Galactica, which I really wish Stephanie had watched Battlestar Galactica so we could kind of... Because she's a big on the Lost now, and I'm sure she'd have some great input. But what I'm getting at is, J.J. Abrams, here's an example. J.J. Abrams, I mean, while he is involved in Lost, he's involved in all of his creations, he's not, like, got his finger in the till, if you will. He's not always in it.
He's not completely committed
it's
to
fair,
it.
I mean, they have said they have got an end plan for season six to end on something. They've got where they want to end up. But try and tell me there have not been times, and I know we're going off on a Lost tangent, but try and tell me there have not been times during the run of Lost that it just feels like he's been pulling shit, and him and his writers have been pulling shit out of their asses.
Well,
out
the
of
whole
nowhere.
Thing with Lily and Anna Rosa, or Libby. Libby and Anna Rosa.
And Anna Lucia.
And Anna, yeah, sorry, Anna Rosa. Anna Lucia. Where did Anna Rosa come from?
Maybe you're thinking of Anna Rosa.
Perhaps.
I certainly hope not, because she's a...
But no, I doubt it. With Anna Lucia and Libby, they just kill them off, and then they don't... And sorry, spoiler alert, on that one, I don't really care.
I doubt anyone who's watching Battlestar Galactica isn't watching Lost.
Right.
And I mean that sincerely, because... I mean...
Well, you knew that this was going to be a spoiler for a lot of things, so just deal with the fact that they just got shot, and
in
that's
there.
What happened. And then they just ended their storyline.
Hold on, and I'm going to be a bigger dick. Michael shot him! Suck on that, America!
Right!
Yeah, let's go.
Terrible. Also, the whole numbers thing, which they haven't even talked about in the past... Two seasons!
After having seen Battlestar Galactica, I'm starting to think the numbers are very similar to the notes of all along the Watchtower, and that apparently if you type the numbers in, it'll jump you to real Earth. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe if they type the numbers in, it'll take them back to the present day instead of 1977.
But there's no... I don't know. I think they're going to get back around to it. It's just one of those things that I'm like...
But we're going off point.
Yeah.
The point I was trying to make, though, is J.J. Abrams... While I do say they have, and I know this is not all him, this is the situation that I think a lot of people, I got 2 points to make here, and I kind of got to do them concurrently. It's going to be very difficult. J.J. Abrams and Joss Whedon, there's two great examples. Now, there's two guys who are, for the most part, almost solely single-handedly credited for the brilliance of their programs.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not entirely true. A lot of people forsake the writing staffs of these shows. People like, for Lost, you got Drew Goddard, you've got Javier Grillo, Mark Swatch, the man who created The Middleman, I love him. They've got a lot of people who have had a big hand in this and have probably created some of the more memorable turns and twists and story ideas for these shows that J.J. Abrams had no fucking piece of. Same goes for Buffy. Joss Whedon, while he is brilliant, J.J. Abrams is brilliant too, but there are so many people. Jaina Svensson, Doug Petrie.
Jaina Svensson is one of the co-executive producers for Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
And is probably one of the main reasons it is as good as it is. I'm not even gonna lie. Having watched the episodes she's written on Buffy, having watched all of Battlestar Galactica, and the woman can write, and the woman has really great ideas, and she has to be part of the reason why.
Exactly.
I mean, like, but she needs her own show.
But what I'm saying is, she certainly does. It's absolutely surprising she hasn't created her own series at this point. I'm sorry I keep pointing at you. They can't see it, but I keep pointing at you in this very, like,
yes,
interrogative manner.
Anyway.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to keep doing that.
It's fine. I'm entirely okay with it.
Okay. But Battlestar Galactica, we talked about Ronald D. Moore, especially Ronald D. Moore, but David Icke as well, and Jaina Svensson for that matter. These are, I mean, the one great thing about Battlestar Galactica on sort of an external view is people who love this show know that the reason why they love this show in many ways is they know these people by name and they appreciate it. But I don't know a single BSG fan who cannot tell me that Ronald T. Moore
and David Icke.
David Icke and James Svensson in some cases are almost solely responsible for this show being as great as it is. And it ties back into...
That being said, I think a big part of the show is Edward James Olmos. As he is one of the directors. He directs a lot of the shows. He directed The Plan. He directed Razor, did he not?
I think he did.
And I don't know that he's ever taken any writing credits, but he is very essential to the part.
Edward James Olmos is the Hispanic Superman. Did Stephanie tell you about that?
I totally believe it. I didn't know, but no.
No,
but
here's what I'll totally say. Is. I'm going to tell these folks a humorous story to make them laugh.
Okay.
We're in Spanish class right now. We're in Intermediate Spanish 2. The other day in class, we had an assignment where we had to write various things that we feel are symbols of the United States community and the Latin American community. And we had this back and forth thing. And I mean, it was just room for us to be as disgustingly racist in our own private time as we wanted to be. Because we come from Hendersonville, where, I mean, this population is literally, at this point, almost 50-50 Mexican immigrants and Caucasians. Not necessarily a bad thing, I'm just saying. But we're in the Spanish class right now, and so Stephanie, she's taking it a little more extreme. She's writing things like sombrero, taco, salsa. And I'm writing things like wacky-ass television. But what was great about it is there was almost a correlation, because on the one side you had the U.S., and the other side you had the Latin American community. And it seemed to me that I had to make 5 different points. And it seemed to me that I was doing, like, this is what this is in the United States, and this is what this is in the Latin American community. And when it got down to putting down Superman as an American icon, the opposite of Superman, apparently, in Latin America, in my mind, all of a sudden, out comes Edward James Olmos. So apparently, Edward James Olmos is the Hispanic Superman. And I believe it, because the man
can do anything.
He's incredible.
He
can reach these kids.
I have to reach these kids.
How do I reach these kids? He can reach these kids.
He's awesome. He is great. And I really wish... This is a personal anecdote. I really wish that I had... I worked at Disney World for a semester. It was a college program idea. And I worked at Epcot. And one of the things that happens at Epcot is they do the cast choir for Christmas. And Edward James Olmos did a reading, and I wasn't able to make it because it was during Christmas.
Oh my gosh.
But I was actually trying to get a part on the choir and had to stop because of scheduling issues. If I had been able to stick with it in the choir, I would have actually gotten to meet shake hands with Edward James Olmos, and it is the one of my greatest like missteps of my life. Like, it's one of the things that I wish that I had done, and will probably wish that I had done for the rest of my life. Shake Edward James Olmos's hand.
What if we all want to?
At the very end of the show, because one of my friends was in the choir, he said that Edward James Olmos turned back to them and said, "You guys rock!" And I just wanted to be part of that, and now I never will be, and it makes me sad. Because
Edward James Olmos.
Edward James Olmos is one of... And I found that his directing style in the shows that he has directed... He is a fantastic director.
Gosh, he is.
He really understands actors and how to play the camera towards the actors. And if anything, this show is about actors. Mary McDonald, Olmos,
Katie Sackhoff. Love my life.
Baltar, the guy who plays Gaeta, who was in an episode of Stargate SG-1, I found out.
Yeah.
Leading the people into resistance.
Yeah. He does. That's all he does.
That's all Gaeta does, apparently, is just lead people in uprisings.
I know most of the actors' names.
I can't remember their names. The entire cast has been freaking fantastic.
There is not
just
a single...
Fracking fantastic.
There's not a bad performance in this show.
None of them. Even Baltar occasionally, like, when he goes over the top...
But he's supposed
to
be.
He's still Baltar and over the top. Like, he's over the top Baltar.
But yeah.
Are we gonna have to wind this down? It's over an hour.
Now. Oh, I don't care.
Okay.
As I told you before, if you're a newcomer, and we'll probably talk about this on the first episode, which will be the one to record sometime later, but won't be this one. As I mentioned before, this show, the Original Unoriginal Podcast, is called such because it's a ripoff of a lot of things. It's a ripoff of mainly two podcasts that I'm a big fan of. One is Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier's Smodcast, which is pretty much the two of them discussing things as we've been doing for this past hour or so. And the Greatest Movie Ever podcast, which is how we did our episode about Magnolia a couple months back. Once again...
Magnolia is the movie that you took?
It was my good friend Jesse's favorite movie.
God!
Be careful, he might be listening.
No, it's not that. It's just that that's a 4-hour long film to be your favorite movie.
It's
a lot of film.
The man, he knows what he likes.
You are more than welcome if you are listening, whatever your name is.
Jesse! Oh,
Jesse.
Sir!
Jesse, sorry, I'm sorry. Do I know him?
No. You've not had the pleasure of meeting
him. Well, I haven't met you, Jesse, and I apologize if you were offended in any way by my comment about Magnolia. It is a wonderful movie. It's just really long, and there's a lot going on.
I
don't know of anyone who would call it their favorite movie.
But like I told you, he mentioned on that podcast we did that he has watched. This was last summer. He discovered Magnolia. I believe it was late May of last year, and watched it 10 times between then and July 4th.
That's a lot of times.
That is dedication.
That is a lot, and I commend you, and I don't understand at the same time.
But anyway, the point is, Greatest Movie Ever was our other inspiration. Both of these, Smodcast and Greatest Movie Ever. Listen, I would almost say, listen, I would rather lose listeners to you guys listening to the genuine article than listen to me try to recreate their magic. But this is why it's called the Original Unoriginal Podcast, because I can't think of anything creatively on my own. I mean, we've made some personal touches. We got the...
There is nothing that is creative, and everything is citational in any way, and so you can't really help it. So don't even worry about it. Don't make me get into postmodernist thought right now.
Yeah, we don't need to blow any people's minds with this. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to cover. I mean, we are kind of winding down there. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to cover in terms of BSG.
We've talked a lot about it. Let me go back to the miniseries, because this is really the best. Well, let's talk about how it references the old show.
It's the old show, for those of you who don't know, of course, and you probably do, of course, if you're listening.
Anyone who knows that Battlestar Galactica is being made now knows that there was a show that was made in the 70s.
That a lot of people
was originally created on a miniseries.
And a lot of people accused it of being a ripoff of Star Wars, since my joke
and
earlier
it could
about...
definitely be... I can see where that came from.
For the record, if the original series is a ripoff of Star Wars, this wasn't.
It wasn't a ripoff of Star Wars. It was definitely a ripoff of the old show, but it doesn't pretend not to be. And...
But this was... I mean, this far surpasses anyone who has, like... Once again, this is... I better not say this, because we had a discussion about this in a completely unrelated manner earlier. But having not seen the old show, I'm going to say... I cannot imagine, and having, actually, I have seen the pilot of the old show, the 2-hour movie.
Having talked to people who actually watched the old show.
I will say, I don't see, there's no way this does not surpass, improve, just decimate the old show with how awesome it is.
This show is very, very awesome, and let me tell you that of the times that they reference it, I mean, all the main characters... the names have not been changed.
By the way, were you aware that Boomer and Colonel Ty in the old show were black?
I was not aware of that.
I learned that yesterday.
But all of them
was on Quick Stop Entertainment. They were action figures from the old BSG, and Colonel Ty and Boomer were black dudes.
That is interesting, and interesting.
It's interesting. I'm just saying it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's very. No, it's even more interesting because a lot of the things they changed. I mean, we can talk about this. This is a very good thing to talk about. A lot of the things they changed from the old show to the new show. Because, first off, I want to correct something I said to you before, and anybody who's listening who's a hardcore BSG fan might be really pissed off at me for making this mistake. Richard Hatch, who played the vice president for the majority of this show, who was, you know, killed in that firing squad a couple episodes back.
Was the original Starbuck.
No, he was not the original Starbuck. He was the original Apollo.
Oh. Okay.
Exactly. I felt bad about making that mistake. But, no, he was the original Apollo. Lauren Green was the original William Adama, or just Adama. I don't think that he had... the name William Adama at that time.
Lauren Green?
Lauren Green is a Canadian actor. He was on Bonanza.
Okay, but we don't know.
He looks a lot like Dr. Cottle, I'm not going to lie. I mean, every time I saw Dr. Cottle, I was like, is that the ghost of Lauren Green playing the doctor? But no. But yes, Battlestar Galactica. Let's see. But yeah, Richard Hatch played the original Apollo. Boomer, as we just mentioned, Boomer and Colonel Ty were black dudes. And here...
And to be clear, from what I know, the old Cylons looked quite a bit like Stormtroopers.
Hence a lot of people's comparisons.
Hence why a lot of people compared it to that. And my father watched the old show, and he said apparently it was about bad people, like people in conflict, but there were just... One side used machines as their army, and the other side used real people.
There were no skin jobs.
There was no like Cylon skin job idea. There was none of that. There was no Boomer that happened to be also a Cylon. It was they were real people.
It was just humans versus Cylons.
Cylons being controlled by other humans
by evil business tycoons, right. Essentially. But talking about characters who were changed, the obvious one, of course, is Starbuck. That's the one people always talk about first. Starbuck,
because
of course, was
the
Starbuck
guy.
On the old show. A lot of people, this is why it was such a shock when they cast Katie Sackhoff. A lot of people remember the old Starbuck was like, a lot of people say he was a manly man. He was
right.
Epitome of a man.
But Starbuck in this one is a girl who is the epitome of a man.
She really got me. She's a tomboy.
She's very much.
She's the cutest little tomboy I ever did see. I'm sorry. I fucking love Cara Grace. I can gush about her forever. But it's mostly Katie Sackhoff, because, good God, that woman.
Well, I have to say that Mary McDonald does...
Oh my gosh!
Only
that is
the
a
most
beautiful
fabulous part. And she's gorgeous.
Oh my
gorgeous.
Gosh, that,
really
that is a woman who's aged incredibly well.
And, I mean, she's a fabulous actress, like, just absolutely...
And I'll tell you something, the only thing
really
the only thing I knew her from before this was being the President's Wife in Independence Day, honestly. That was the only thing I'd ever seen her in.
She's not done a whole lot, but that was the main thing. She's done more TV.
I know she was in Dances with Wolves. I know a lot of people always talk about that. But I didn't care for her back then, mainly because I didn't care for the President's Wife character in Independence Day. But now she's
right.
President Laura Roslin. I'm like...
She's fabulous.
She's fantastic.
She's
wonderful
good.
And beautiful and talented. And gosh, you know, I want to have her babies.
And
you know, like,
her, like, watching her go through her disease of cancer.
Oh my gosh, so heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking, but she does it... perfectly. Like, it's one of those things that it happens very slowly over the course of 4 years that you watch the show, or the 4 seasons that you watch it. Like, it's so delicate the way they progress her disease. And it has everything to do with the way she portrays it. Like, it's not that she suddenly gets sicker on certain episodes, or that no. she suddenly it's a progressive
gradual
disease
movement.
That moves gradually throughout the show, and it's just she being able to keep up with that for 4 years is just like freakishly hard, I would assume. And
but not as hard as Edward James Olmos. No, it's harder. I'm sorry, I was about to make a joke about the porn stash, because I mean you can't talk about BSG without talking about the damn porn stash.
Edward James Olmos and his freaking mustache that he had when he was younger and then got rid of and then got back and then got rid of, and he's had and not had his mustache
multiple times throughout the show,
either in flashback or in just real life.
But he had the porn stash.
And he has such a porn stash, and I think it's the ugliest thing in the world, and it's just...
It makes him look almost canine or feline.
It's
looks
weird. It's
when he's
so...
when he's clean-shaven, that is an attractive, wrinkly old Hispanic man.
Yes, it is. And the thing is that with his stash, I just cannot take him seriously. And it's not even that it's a fake stash, because it looks real.
It's a real stash.
I can't take the character's personality at all seriously anymore. It's like... Why are you doing this? You're not... That's not who you are.
That is just a distinguished, attractive, Hispanic actor.
Yeah.
Classic fella.
If I'm going to crush on anyone, it's going to be on Apollo.
What can you say about... what's his name? Jamie
All
Bamber?
All I can say...
Jamie Bamber, that's his name.
Is there's a episode in season 2 called Final Cut. It's about a documentary that's made about Battlestar Galactica and the crew of Battlestar Galactica. And at one moment in this thing... the documentary crew gets into the quarters where it's like you get to not it's the quarters of the troops, and they are like half naked and like just playing around because that's where they're allowed to cool down and be themselves. And he is like just come out of the shower, wrapped a towel around his torso, or like right at his hips. And he is just fine. Oh my god, he is the perfect human figure I have ever seen. And then they come up and talk to him, and at one point his towel falls away, and he just barely covers himself. And I flip out every time I see it, having seen it more than a few times. It's actually the background to my desktop. My desktop background is that one shot of him
really
covering himself.
That is
awesome. It just so happens that it wasn't that I tried to get it. It was that I saw an article that was talking about him, and
yeah,
it had that,
that
shot.
That is awesome.
And I put that shot on my background, and it's awesome, and I love it.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, there's that.
I think we're pretty good, honestly.
I do want to give some props to some people before we close this out.
Okay.
Some props to some characters and to some actors.
Okay.
Just kind of rapid fire. The Chief. The Chief is awesome.
The Chief.
Chief Galen Tyrrell.
Oh. Yeah.
Where are you, sir? Galen, come on!
Wait. No. The Chief is... Okay, for some reason, I could not think of...
Were you thinking of Lynn Thigpen?
No, at first I was thinking of the Admiral of Pegasus for some reason.
Oh.
And I was like, why am I thinking of that? But no. The Chief. He's, I don't know, of all of the characters of Battlestar Galactica, he's probably one of the least interesting to me. But you haven't seen the episode, which you absolutely have to go see. It's an episode called Flight of the Phoenix. It's in season 2, end of season 2, and, it's... You wouldn't know anything else about it other than he decides to rally the crew around an idea, as opposed to, because it's... Season 2 is a lot about, how they have no hope for a future, and they just keep running on autopilot, and this is one of those episodes where he's like, I'm gonna do something crazy, and so, do you want me to tell you what happens? Or do you want to watch it? Okay.
I will wait.
Look up, when you see Flight of the Phoenix, know that it's one of my favorite episodes, possibly my favorite episode.
Okay.
Of Battlestar Galactica.
So Chief...
But Chief is awesome. He's great. Callie? I don't even know what to say about Callie.
Here's the thing.
I think Callie may have been either the worst written, not saying that that's a bad thing. She's really great. I mean, all of them are great. But if I were to say who was the worst written / worst acted character... I would say her.
Here's the thing about Callie for me. Remember, I'm coming in just from season 3.
Yeah.
And from season 3 on, I was in love with her. And I've got to be completely honest.
Then you would be in love with her anyway. Because she does... She's very background character in
most
of seasons 1 and 2.
I found her to be wonderful and just a ray of sunshine, I felt. I don't know why. Maybe I'm weird. I know.
I thought that she was bipolar.
I view her
at best.
I'll be honest, I kind of view her in the same kind of affection that I view Margene on Big Love.
That makes me sad because I think Margene is freaking amazing. Like, just I
want to give everything to Margene. Are you kidding me?
I want Margene to have everything in life ever that she's ever wanted for the rest of her life. I want her to have it because she's just my favorite person in the world.
I
can see how you liken her to that. Like, there's a lot of parallels that can be drawn between.
No,
Callie
I will
and
say that. In
but
terms
I think
of my
Callie
affections,
is...
my affections do lie more in the Margene camp of the two.
Right.
But just to say, similar affections.
But for me, it's just Callie is a little too bipolar for me to. It's less believable. I'm not saying that she isn't believable. I'm just saying she's less believable.
But yeah.
One person you never met, which you will meet very quickly, is Billy.
Isn't
and I have to
the
talk
curly
about
hair
Billy.
That I've seen a picture of?
President's aide?
Yes, I've seen a picture of him.
Okay. He is fucking fantastic. I'm not even going to say it. He's fracking fantastic.
The Last Frack. We have not done enough fracking.
Frack.
Terrible.
Frack.
You say like
It's really weird. Side note on that one, I'm sitting in a living room and the TV had a weird thing on it. Anyway, he is just such an adorable little character, and I'm not gonna say any more because I actually don't want to spoil this for Jeff.
I know he meets an unfortunate end.
He meets an unfortunate end, and I hated that because he is the Margene of men to me. I just want him to have everything that he's ever wanted because he's just the cutest, most heartfelt guy ever, and I love him. And I'm not gonna say anymore.
Okay.
But D, let's talk about D.
Here's the thing about D. That is actually a character that I did not really care for too much.
I think you would care for her more
if I'd seen the first.
You had seen the first two seasons. Because in the first two seasons, she's slightly more important. That we don't have to say much more about that. I just wanted to say props for Dee.
Okay. Now, that's what I'm kind of going for too. I do want to kind of give an extended props to Michael Hogan, television's Colonel Saul Tye, because holy fuckballs,
he has been
the man with the patch, the man who brought you into this game.
The man who brought me into this game was Colonel Tye because of his crazy eye patch.
And
you'll remember,
a couple of years ago, you probably heard about this since we've been watching Bowser Interest, definitely mentioned it before. Back fall 06, when I was living back home in my hometown, I had just started watching BSG. That was when I started watching it. And at the time, I had just recently taken up some smoking. Of cigarettes, something that I'm still trying to very gradually kick to this day. Doing better than I used to, for the record, listeners. If you're listening, if it affects your opinion of me, I'm sorry.
Continue.
But anyway, the point is, when me and Stephanie would go sit on her back porch and smoke after on a smoke break, and every time I would put out my cigarette, I would take one last drag and really scrunch out my face and look really angry, and I'd be like. Damn, Cylons. And that was my impression of Ty, which, for the record, for some reason, I always spoke that.
What I never got was that Ty, even up until the almost last episode, he has said, frack the Cylons, and they are, he is
even
a Cylon.
He
he's like, you can take them, you can airlock them out.
Bro,
and I'm like, you're a Zion!
But what I'm saying
is
that impression, the point I was getting at though, is for some reason that impression had a British accent. But keep in mind,
okay.
I had just started watching the show. I didn't know him well.
Funny notes, like
Michael
funny
Hogan
note.
Does have that weird, like, kind of
Michael
American
Hogan is,
Irish brogue to him.
But Michael Hogan is actually Canadian.
That explains a lot.
Starred on Canadian murder mystery shows that were that I saw one episode of when I was back home and my dad was watching Sleuth Channel. It was some Canadian, like...
Da Vinci's Inquest?
Yes!
It was Da Vinci's Inquest?
It was Da Vinci's Inquest.
Holy shit.
So he was on that, or maybe it was the one right before that. It was either Da Vinci's Inquest or...
The one that the follow-up series, Da Vinci's... City Hall or whatever.
Maybe, I don't know. It's yeah. He starred on Canadian Murder Mysteries, and I just thought that was hilarious. But
Fracken, Cylons, that's my new time impression. Fracken, Cylons, Airlock.
I have to say, mad props to Ellen Ty.
Yes, good God.
You haven't seen her from seasons 1 and 2. There's a huge switch and change because you've seen her from...
I've seen her from seemingly betraying the human race to
right.
coming back as one of the Final Five and being awesome.
Right. That whole switch is the Final Five thing made her for me because I love me some Ellen Ty now. I love her to death. And
I love the fact that she is a woman of her age, but acts kind of like a giggly schoolgirl for the most part.
But it's
and
still
I find
smart
it to be so
and,
cute.
And interesting, and she's
it's so cute. I'm sorry. That's the sick part of me. I'm sorry.
Mad props, and this is sort of extended from earlier, to Gaeta.
Okay.
The one gay character on our show.
Yep.
Gaeta, by the way. Well, and his lover.
His lover.
Became the admiral for like
Hoshi.
A day.
Fucking Hoshi.
Hoshi.
Although, for the record, would you want to say that Baltar is bisexual? Since clearly he apparently had an affair with Gaeta at some point.
No, Gaeta's just always loved him. What do you mean? I'm confused.
When they were having the conversation just before they killed Gaeta in the firing squad, I'm sorry, but I took that to mean he and Gaeta had straight up had a friggin' affair at some point.
It's possible. I don't.
Because I kind of view in that sense, I kind of
Gaeta was. I'm fairly certain Gaeta was in love with him, and there's been a like there's been a pining from Gaeta to Baltar. For a while.
But what I'm. Because I kind of view Baltar in many ways as kind of being like a Captain Jack Harkness, if you will. Kind of.
Yeah.
Not bisexual, just every sexual.
I wouldn't doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that they may have done something, but there was no clear indication that they had, and even in that last moment, I don't think it was a admission. It may have been something that they were playing around with and just wanted you to think
yeah.
it might have happened.
But
Gaeta, who is our one gay character, and you find out... This is the one thing I have to say about the show that I hate. I hate. One and only thing, it's the smallest thing in the world. Aside from the fact that I'm gay and it's not the smallest thing in the world. You find out that Gaeta is gay in...
Second half of the fourth season.
In a webisode called Face of the Enemy... You find out he is gay, and he immediately becomes the enemy, and has to be killed. Granted, these are two separate things, however, you find out he is gay, and then he must be killed.
Because he wants to take over the
because
ship.
Because he is doing things that are aberrant to the society. Not necessarily being gay wasn't part of that necessarily, but you find out he's gay, and then he has to die. Because he is... a revolutionary person. And I just wanted to, like, cry a little in my... Because as a homosexual and as a vehement homosexual, I guess, or a...
Vehement.
Or someone who is big into gay theory and stuff like that, it doesn't really shine a very nice light on the gays. That being said, love you, Gaeta. You're great.
Gaeta, He's trying to make sure... Oh my gosh, Caprica 6.
Oh my gosh.
Let's talk about the Cylons just for... We're really...
Dean Stockwell. We haven't even talked about Dean Stockwell.
Yeah, I want to...
Oh my god,
let's close this out because... I mean, I wanted...
Really running over time.
I wanted to hit the hour and 30 minute mark, which we just have. But I'm willing to go at hour 45. If we can close out by talking about what... I mean... Okay, Adama, Starbuck, Apollo, whatever. The key, the central focus of the show, that, the thing that sets this show apart from so many others, the thing that, I mean, it was the impetus for my original impression of Ty. Cylons. Such a key thing, of course.
Right.
And the skin jobs were all played by some pretty fantastic people. And we should spotlight a number
of... When we were doing props to... Did we do props to Boomer? Because we needed to do props to Boomer.
We should start with Boomer, since she's like the kind of the good props kind of a good bridge.
Yeah, props to Boomer. Because that Boomer, that
Athena,
actress,
Sharon Agathon, Grace Park, as it were.
Grace Park is the actress. Had the hardest job of any actor slash actress on that show.
She played like five different characters.
Including like histories of their characters and all of this other stuff, and
a shitload of copies of number eight.
Right, but here's the thing: was one of the only ones that had to maintain her character, like who were essential characters to the plot, like specifically Boomer and Athena were essential characters to the plot and had to play against each other more than once, and had to play like within the same episode. She would be playing Boomer and Athena and other eights that were around.
Yeah.
And that was fucking... there's no way that wasn't fracking hard, because that had to have been. Like, it was ridiculous. So, massive props to Boomer. Grace Park, Athena, whatever you want to call it. Awesome.
So,
Caprica 6.
Let's talk about Caprica 6, because let me tell you something. Battlestar Galactica, when it originally started with the miniseries, in fact, I have a postcard that had this on it. One of the key things that they promoted about this show, above all others, was the relationship between Caprica 6 and Gaius Baltar.
Oh, yeah.
So, why am I forgetting her name all of a sudden? The actress. Oh, my God.
Well, we can call her Caprica 6. Awesome. Amazing. She's played a few extra characters as well.
But I'm saying she was like the image of the show.
But she has been the centralizing image of the show. Because... first of all, she's gorgeous.
Oh my gosh.
Gorgeous. One of the, like, premier, like, I think that she could win Miss Universe pageant.
She was a model.
Okay, Miss Universe, in quotation, because
yeah.
Universe.
Yeah.
But anyway, she could totally, like, she is one of the
Trisha
most
Helfer.
Beautiful people. Trisha Helfer.
I win.
Yes, Trisha Helfer. She has a voice that is like chocolate syrup.
Yes.
She has eyes that emote so much energy and just emotion that you can't, like, you have to feel what she is feeling. She is a enigmatic actress. She is the definition of enigmatic actress, or of magnetism, I guess. She attracts you as a... I'm just having the shift around.
Greg is repositioning himself. You hear the shifting of upholsteries. Don't freak out.
Anyway, she's just ridiculously amazing. And I love her. Love her. Love her. Anything you want to say?
I did want to go ahead. Since we caught ourselves at that moment, just want to say... we love this show, guys. And I usually know the names of... every actor and everything.
I'm really terrible about knowing names
of
people.
But for some reason, after the mind-blowing experience, I think my brain is dead a little bit. I'm forgetting things I wouldn't usually know. I'm remembering a couple of them, or it might take me a while to dredge up the name of these people, because they're all worthy of our attention and our respect.
Oh, yes. Entirely.
But yes, Trisha Helfer, the models, the number six models, we've got...
Dean Stockwell.
I think we should close in on Dean Stockwell, because Dean Stockwell,
Cavill,
is he's model number, what's his model number?
He was model number one.
He was model number one.
Yes.
Okay. That's the perfect way to close out then. Dean Stockwell, you may know him as Al from television's Quantum Leap.
Oh my God. You may know him from Blue Velvet, where he plays a sex addict. Which you probably don't know because you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it yet.
David Lynch film. Good film. Not one of my favorites of David Lynch's.
I'm sure I score better than Mulholland.
And you'll probably like it a lot better because it actually has
a
storyline to it. But Dean Stockwell has always just been awesome and has picked...
he's been a great
really
character
great characters.
For so many years.
And he really deserves all of the credit he can get. Because he is just fantastic. He played a great comic character.
Yeah.
He really pulled that story along. And then in this one, he has played one of the greatest villains.
Oh my God.
Of all time. Because it's not that he's a villain in any... because this...
he's not so much evil, it's just...
this show, in general, has blurred the line as much as any show can, blur the line between good and evil.
They never really even mention the concept of good and evil. It's really just, these are two people with very different agendas and viewpoints.
Right.
And some of them go about getting their viewpoints felt through some very violent and unnecessary means that seem kind of wrong to us. But they're not necessarily evil. They will never, ever say that they are evil.
Right. And it, because
but in the most common traditional sense,
yeah,
Cavill is a villain, and what a villain.
And the greatest of villains. And he of all of them, I think, really captured what it was to be a Cylon. Like, granted, a lot of that was the writing,
yeah,
and a lot of the writing wanted other Cylons to think that they were trying to be human. He really captured this idea of hatred of self. To the point of, like, wanting to be more than just a person. He wanted to, or just a Cylon. He wanted to branch out and be more a machine and just more perfect.
And you know what I'm thinking about this
great.
Now? Holy fuck, the way he went out.
Oh, yeah.
You guys lived it if you're listening. Hopefully you lived it with us. That scene in just like 15 seconds was one of the most intense things I've ever seen on this show.
I was just so surprised that he decided to blow his own brains out.
Friggin', you know, like, as we all understood, and I'm so glad he did, but let me tell you something. If you want to talk about a character I never liked, Tori. Never liked her.
Oh my god.
Never.
I could never stand her.
Never liked her. So to see Chief just cracking the life out of her neck, just strangling the life out of her, and
right,
finding out that she killed his wife. Oh my gosh.
Callie, his wife.
That was so much catharsis as a viewer. Just
oh, yeah.
Him
it,
kill her.
It was so necessary.
Oh my gosh. But
I,
like,
hated her for more.
I hated her from the minute I saw her.
And they set you up for that. Like, you never are supposed to like her as a character, even though she's on the good guy side.
She's always been a fucking cunt.
And even though she's been really close to being, like, someone who is important, she's never actually been that important, and she's only ever been a bitch.
I mean, good God.
So.
But to see him, but that whole scene, I mean, I just want to kind of just think about that just for a second before we get right back to really finish on Dean Stockwell. That scene, just, Chief starts strangling her. The lights are going nuts. The camera is losing its shit. You know, Adama's ducking. People are shooting machine guns and killing, what's his name, number, whatever his name is.
Yeah, that one.
Black guy.
Yeah, the black guy and the other white guy that's
the nerdy
Cylon
white guy. And then Cavill pulls out a fucking pistol, shoves it in his mouth, and just pulls the fucking trigger. Oh my gosh. After all of his self-preservationist attitude.
And he really has, like, I mean, the reason all of this has happened, sort of, has been because he's wanted to, he's been self-preservation. And all of this, like, and it seems so against his character.
It just gets tossed out the window because motherfucker pops, it just blows his brains
blows
out.
Blows his own brains out, and that's it. That's fucking, and there's no resurrection ship for him to go back to. There's no resurrection.
I mean, I can't fathom his logic. I mean, I know when you're in a heated moment like that, you do crazy shit, but just to see this character we have known to be the central self-preservationist of all the Cylons just blow his brains out
on
the friggin' CIC. Holy shit. What a way. But just another testament. And I know it's just writing and he had to do it, but just could have been nobody better than Dean Stockwell.
Yeah.
Could have been nobody better. Just to have, just to really drive that scene home. Nobody better to shove a gun in his mouth
and
than TV's Dean Stockwell. Holy shit.
Really great.
So we're about to wrap it up, and I'm gonna close it out the way I always do. I'm gonna be editing, and just letting you know, I don't know if you've ever listened to this, and I urge you to know that you're kind of a part of it. Greg, just to let you know, we've discussed this before, and I mean, we're probably gonna mention it in the second podcast that we're recording, which will be the first podcast you hear, yada yada yada. The point is, Greg and I have discussed for a long while. Him sort of being a bit of a go-to co-host while I'm in the college town that I'm in.
Until the end of the semester.
Until the end of the semester. Until the SciACs are back at my disposal, or until I've got other people who'd be willing to. I mean, there's nobody better if I want to really kind of kick this back off. Because here's a man who's got some fantastic ideas, great creative mind, and we're going to, and as we've seen through this podcast today, we're going to have a lot of great conversations ahead of us. But a great way to kick the original podcast back into high gear than with a great thinker like Mr. Greg Greene. And
thank you.
And I mean that sincerely.
It's a bit high and mighty, I feel.
Okay.
But I don't want to necessarily accept all of that, but thank you so much for bringing
that. But Greg will probably be with us for a number of episodes over the next couple of months. I'm really kind of looking, my goal is to sort of do like maybe one episode a week. This will be two, like, I want to record. We'll get into the particulars after that. But the point is, ladies and gentlemen, Battlestar Galactica, quite probably, quite possibly, quite anything, the greatest show in the history of television.
If not the greatest,
top two.
Definitely, in my view, the top two.
Oh my gosh, flawless. Check it out if you have been listening to this.
Amazing craftsmanship.
If you have been listening to this and you've never seen it before, shame on you. Go watch it. I don't care if you have learned things. You will still enjoy the hell out of it because there are certain things I knew about the show going in that I still love it. But
it's a show worthy
visually,
of anyone's time.
Mentally, theologically, spiritually, everything possibly that could be, end with an L-Y, fulfilling. Battlestar Galactica, created by Ronald D. Moore and David Icke. Last seen on the Sci-Fi Channel. Complete series will be out this summer. Go out and pay $200. It's totally worth it.
Or get Netflix and watch it.
Yeah, get Netflix, but really. I'm
point being, watch this show.
Yes, watch this show. And Mr. Greg Greene, I suppose we'll be back sometime in the next couple of weeks. We'll be back with not as much of a specific episode. It won't be so specific about one topic. I mean, let's be honest. We covered a lot of ground beyond Battlestar Galactica. But we did close it out with at least an hour of Battlestar Galactica discussion, so I'm proud of that. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. See you soon.
He's been Greg Greene. I've been Jeff Heatherly. And as I always say, go experience 7 days. Good night, folks.